Hello and welcome to Cage Club, two fans, 82 movies, one cage. This is episode 85, Arsenal, from 2017. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski, and with us today, for the first time in a long time, we have a first-time guest, Ed Jefferson, all the way from England. Hello, Ed.
Hiya.
So you, welcome to the show. You have a very, I guess, broad history. I don't know what the word is. Like, you've, like us, you've seen every Cage movie. So that's very that
yeah,
makes me happy.
Yeah, to a certain point. I haven't seen every one of the recent ones.
Okay.
But I did a project last year where I watched two Nicolas Cage movies a week and then played the UK National Lottery using numbers based on the each movie. My theory being something along the lines of Cage's Nauvoo shamanic kind of acting force would somehow leak through and magically influence the universe and cause me to win millions of pounds in the UK lottery, which, spoilers, did not happen.
Oh. Did you make it those numbers from It Could Happen to You, man? Those were the ones I would play.
I think I only got... I can't remember. I feel like that you can't... Like, there was some mismatch between the lottery and that and the UK National Lottery. Like, there are only five numbers in that and six in the other. Or like, you couldn't see all the numbers. There was some reason I couldn't use the numbers, which is really irritating.
Well, that's... I mean, that's the secret to winning the lottery, I guess, is just finding the lottery that lets you use those numbers. So that's the trick to winning millions of dollars, everyone.
Well, possibly you have to go back to 1994, though, and also use it back the right week. I don't know if that's the... So I write about this for twice a week every year or on a Medium blog, which are all the things are still there. But yeah, my plan is to each year do maybe a certain update weeks where I do... Which I thought was going to be maybe a couple of times a year, but he's got five movies already since I finished this in October, and he's had five out, so it's already turning into more work than I expected to keep doing it. So,
and he's got another five or six this year coming out. This is the first... This one, you know, it went through two different name changes, has three different names, and then just seemingly out of nowhere, right, Mike? It was just oh, hey, January 6th, new release date, video on demand. We're this is the first new release from this year that I saw, even though I didn't like the movie very much, and we'll get into that. It was a great way to start off the year with a new Cage movie.
Yeah, and it was also the weekend of his birthday.
That's
right?
True.
So it was almost like it was his birthday, but we got the present. We got the new Cage movie. And it is funny because last year it did seem like more than usual. Like, I think we were a little caught off guard with Army of One and Dog Eat Dog even coming out at the end of the year like that. And then, yeah, it's just really funny that so soon into 2017 we already have a new Cage movie.
Before we talk about this movie, Ed, I guess I don't know if it's a two-part question or two different questions. Very important, though. What's your favorite Nicolas Cage movie and your least favorite Nicolas Cage movie?
Favorite Face Off is definitely up there as sort of just he is superb in it, and it's an all-time brilliant sort of cross-genre kind of just bundle of it's an astonishing film in so many ways, and it's one of all the best Nicolas Cage films. It's simultaneously completely ridiculous but completely brilliant.
Yeah,
adaptation as a slightly more kind of in a slightly more serious kind of note, but it is superb. Pick a worse one's hard though, because it's this. I just feel because there are ones that I think are, and this is what. So a film I imagine we might end up talking about later is Deadfall, which I think is in many ways objectively the worst thing he's ever been in, but it does have aspects that are entertaining, where he's been in a lot of terrible thrillers that are not you couldn't hand on heart go, this is the worst thing I've ever seen, but it's hard to remember much about them half an hour after you've seen them. And I think it's more like that there's a sort of a rash, especially in the last 10-15 years, of just sort of, oh no, his wife or daughter's in trouble and he's gonna look vaguely annoyed about it, and you just think, oh god, not again. Especially when I was having to watch two of these a week.
So what I think's interesting about Deadfall and this movie, which sort of went from a could this be a sequel to apparently yes it is a sequel, which is, we're going to get into the implausibility of that in a little bit, but that movie and this movie and honestly all five he did last year, they're all varying quality in terms of how good they are, but like we've been saying pretty much every episode we record, he's consistently the best and most entertaining part of the movie. So even when the movie's not good, if you're there for him, at least you get that. It's not like he's boring and he's given nothing to do and he's put in the background for instance, in Dying of the Light or The Runner. Like, those weren't great, and he wasn't great in those. But at least, you know, with these movies that we don't necessarily love, I think that it's important that he is worth seeing in these things, even if the movie around him isn't really worth seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it feels like he's sort of picking slightly more interesting roles again than he has been, like, necessarily. The last movie I did was, as part of the winning lottery of Nicolas Cage thing, was I'm blanking the name now. The Trust with Elijah Wood, which I thought was like a really great example of like not the greatest movie in the world, but it's a pretty great performance from Cage. It's like it's not like necessarily his most like original performance. It's got lots of sort of stuff that he's done before, but it's a pretty good example of like lots of things he can do quite well. Like, and it was quite refreshing, I should say, after Dying of the Light and The Runner and things. We just thought, well, anyone could have done this. Like, it's just look a bit bored and grumpy for 2 hours.
Yeah, I think we've been getting lucky recently, like last year, that he seems to be having fun in these movies, at least, where it's like, you know, Pay the Ghost is just, that's just a slog. It's just so tough. Like, and there are, in like Rage or Tokarev, I don't know what it's called overseas, but like, you could see some of those movies, he doesn't seem to be having a lot of fun, but this year or last year, like with The Trust, like we get him with the mustache, his father is Jerry Lewis, he fumbles with drinks at one point, and then he has a great freak out towards the end. So I feel like this year we've got him, he's having fun and we're having fun watching him. Like, he's given at least one great speech a movie, or he's bringing back old characters like in this movie, like which Eddie. Is really interesting. Yeah.
Oh, before we get into this movie, I have one more question for you, Ed. Why did you start what you did? Why did you decide to watch every movie?
When I first sort of started to really sort of notice Nicolas Cage before, and this is going back a few years, uh-huh. Like, I think I'd happened to stumble across, like, see a few of his films in a row. Like, I think maybe, like, the National Treasure films had shown up on Netflix, and I happened to go, okay, I'll watch whatever this is, and then Face Off happened to be on the telly, and there were a few, like, other things I was, like, starting to get really into him as a performer. And I had this idea, I was like, okay, I'll go back and watch everything he's ever done. And my thought then was, what I was going to do is just take a, because I'm naturally quite lazy. I was like, I think initially I thought maybe I'd review them, but I was like, no, I'll take 3 screenshots from each movie with the funniest face he pulled. Mm-hmm. And then I had like a little Tumblr block, and I did that for, I don't know, I did like 15, 20 of the movies, and then sort of, but I didn't have any sort of schedule, and life sort of overtook it, and it stopped. And then kind of, it sort of came back to me. I think I was looking, it was around like New Year last year, and I was thinking, oh, it would be really good to have. I'm a freelance writer, but I don't necessarily always write about things that I'm particularly interested in writing about. I'm not always for, like, sometimes it's sort of things for marketing companies and things no one actually necessarily ever reads. So I was like, okay, I want to do something that people might be interested in reading, and it's for me, and it's sort of regular. So I was like, okay, I went back to this idea. I was like, I'll review Nicolas Cage movies. And I thought, if I tie it to something, the lottery, then that happens regularly, so I'm forced to do it. I know a few, like, a couple of people are doing, I talk to some other guys who do podcasts like you guys, and I think mm-hmm. it's probably slightly easier if you're doing a thing with someone else that you've got sort of like the least, like, what if one of you is going like, oh god, I'm bored of all these Nicolas Cage movies, the other one could pull you back in. But so I needed to have something like the equivalent of that for me was the lottery, that I had to have that going. I was like, well, if I can't not do it this week, this will be the week I win.
Oh, so your podcast co-host is the lottery. Yes.
Yeah. It was essentially like a writing task, really, to kind of keep myself sharp with sort of the initial kind of endeavour of it. With the thing that I did also quite a lot, was quite interested in the earlier following an actor's entire career, and Cage was an actor I was interested in. So.
Well, that's a really clever way to sort of give yourself like a scheduled deadline, but also to sort of keep it not just about Cage, but also adding something else in there too, that you might win millions of pounds.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem was that, like, initially it was definitely like, this lottery thing is definitely just a writing exercise, and then I think by the time I'd done it like 3 months, I think part of my brain was genuinely starting to believe that I would win the lottery, and I was sort of definitely caught myself planning what I would do when I won the lottery, and I was like, this healthy? Probably not, don't know what to do about that though. So it's probably good. I think I might have probably gone mad if I actually had one, so it's probably good I didn't. Because I don't know, would that prove that you can cause magic in the world by watching every Nicolas Cage film in order? I don't know if it would be. It would probably do slightly odd things to one's mind if that sort of thing happens. So,
did you ever win?
Once. So in the UK lottery system as it stands, if you win three numbers out of six, mm-hmm. you win £25. I didn't actually win this on any of the regular ones I did, but a website paid me to do a special edition where I reviewed The Trust when it came out on DVD, and I won £25 and I got paid a small fee by the website. So I think in the end I have, because I wrote for the a British magazine called The New Statesman that I wrote for, and I think including the fee from that I might just about be value neutral on the entire project once you like calculate all the money I've spent on lottery tickets right now. I think I'm just about.
So the secret to success, both for you and I guess for everybody, is get paid to do what you love, you'll also win the lottery at the same time.
Well, it's the secret to not losing any money, I guess.
Okay. That's better,
like,
yes. Okay.
Pay to do something really stupid, and then maybe you can convince someone to pay you a small amount of money to write about it.
With this movie, with Arsenal, which came out just a couple days ago on demand, I think when the trailer first came out, was it advertised as a sequel to Deadfall, or people just like, oh, he has the same name, he looks the same, could this be sort of the same kind of guy? Like, it wasn't advertised as a sequel, was it?
I think I'd seen like a news story, and I hadn't even necessarily connected to this film. I'd seen like a news story saying like Cage hints that he's playing the same character, like, but I don't remember seeing. I don't think I'd even seen a trailer for it, to be honest.
Yeah, and I remember seeing the trailer, not hearing any mention of Deadfall, but seeing him as the same character, or thinking it was him at least. Like, I think to us, Joey, like, as, or to Cage aficionados, you see that trailer and you think that is Eddie from Deadfall. It's got to be. What is, something's going on here. What's going on? I didn't think it could be a direct sequel, but it's definitely some sort of spiritual successor to Deadfall.
So that's the thing, because Cage dies at the end of Deadfall.
Yeah, but not even at the end, in the
an
middle.
Hour in, yeah.
He gets the deep fryer.
Which is what, like, maybe, did that win the Cage Club Award? I should have looked it up. Did that win the award for best death?
Most likely. I haven't looked that up since we've done it.
I'm trying to think if there's a more memorable death in the canon. Like,
well, I think as Big Daddy, he was burned alive, too.
Editor Joey here, popping in to interrupt podcaster Joey to say that Deadfall did win Best Death in the Cage Club Awards, and also won Best Freakout, which is this clip here. Enjoy.
Fuck!
So the movie starts out presumably around 1993 when Deadfall came out, and we see him in his kind of mobsterish ways, and then we jump 23 years ahead, and it's like nothing ever happened. Like, it's almost like an alternate reality, because he's got the same name. The other important thing is that his real-life brother, Christopher Coppola, who wrote that movie and directed that movie, is in this movie as his brother. It doesn't make any sense, but it's gotta be the same character, right? Like, not just like a spiritual sequel, but like a straight-up, like, this is the same dude.
Which makes it all the more bizarre, right? Like, are there other examples of cinema where, like, a character's been killed off and brought back not in, like, a prequel way, you know, but, like, as a direct sequel? Because there's no even signs of scarage to his face, or he doesn't have any scars from being burned, or, you know, I would buy it if he at least mentioned his time in L.A. or some sort of reference, but they don't have any reference to Deadfall, which makes it all the more strange to me.
It's super weird.
Is it the same character? Like, because he plays it, like, it's not, I don't think it is played, he doesn't play it, like, exactly the same, like, I'd argue that, like, it's not quite as unhinged as in Deadfall, like, it gets, like, what the scenes with the brother, it gets there, like, with Christopher Coppola, but it's not, like, as fully off the wall in Deadfall, which just kind of just feels like him just turning up as far as he can possibly go. And it feels a little bit more restrained than that here. Like, it's not, it's like, and it's not, I don't know, there's something about it didn't feel, it feels like it's the same, like, look, but it's sort of a slightly more, so it's like what that character would look like in a real movie, kind of, if you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think you nailed something that I was thinking of, like, Deadfall, because I rewatched it before watching Arsenal, because I wanted to just pick up on everything possible, but Deadfall played much more like camp, like a midnight movie, and actually he was a lot more fun this time around watching it. Like, there's crazier characters in that movie. Like, when Cage is dead, Charlie Sheen plays maybe the devil, and he's playing pool. And then there's, like, this weirdo with a robotic lobster claw hand.
The gold guy,
and
right?
Yeah, and there's just all kinds of bizarre shit going on in Deadfall that Eddie doesn't feel all that out of place. Like, he feels like a character that exists in this bizarro world. And I think in Arsenal, the movie takes itself too seriously for him to really fit perfectly. Like, he is way toned down than he is in Deadfall. Like, he just doesn't, he's not as blubbery, he's not as just screamy, he's not as unhinged, maybe. Yeah, I just felt like maybe the movie, the tone of the movie doesn't fit the character quite well. Because no one else in this movie is as outlandish as he is.
So, my favorite part of this movie is when Cage is beating people up in slow motion to gospel music. There's no reason for it. There's no lead up to it. There's no explanation for it, but it's wonderful. And it only happens with him, really. And I don't know if that's done stylistically to match the character, or if that's done, like, if the character is sort of elevated to reach that level. I'm like, I'm not sure which came first, like a chicken and egg thing. It is weird, because everybody else is kind of like, there's no dumb criminals here, which is kind of a little bit of a pleasant relief, as opposed to some other recent Cage movies. Everybody just sort of seems like kind of low-rent thugs just trying to make money or trying to get their brother back or whatever their motivation is in this movie. And then you have Cage, who is just over-the-top crazy Cage, and I feel like this might be another example. There's no trivia for this movie yet on IMDb, but I feel like this might be another example where they were like, hey, you can be in our movie, you can do whatever you want. And he's just like, well, I'm going to bring back Eddie or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it's a mystery. No, we have seen sort of hints of past performances coming through, right? Like with Army of One, he sort of brings back the voice that he used in Peggy Sue Got Married. And so maybe it's a possibility that he is going back to the well, trying to revive old performances or just like experiment again. And, you know, God knows Eddie is a character you can just do anything with. You know, he's bipolar, he's erratic, he's just out of control, he's high on drugs all the time. So like, that is something maybe he wanted to cut loose in a performance and needed to sort of shake a few things out before going to work on something a little more serious or something that's a little more worth it. And maybe it is also worth bringing up that John Cusack's in this film and doesn't even make a dent, you know, like totally wasted. Like, there's a guy, I expected a face-off between Cusack's character and Eddie at some point.
And they never meet, right?
They never even meet, and Cusack is, like, on Valium this whole time. It's really weird.
What is, like, I couldn't get my head really around what Cusack's character, like, was, because he, is he a member of the local police or not? Like, that's the implication, right, is that he's, like, an undercover member of the local police, but mm-hmm. then he tells the guy, what's the star of the film, is it Adrian Grenier? Is that the dude's name? Or I just think of him as the dude from Entourage. He's telling the dude from Entourage, like, oh, I can't help you out with this with Eddie. Like, he's saying, like, the police won't do anything about him. But it's like, are you the police? Or are you, like, and it's never really, like, the police never really appear in this movie other than as undercover police. But it's, like, it's all done because of that. By the end of it, I was getting this, like, is this all just, like, John Cusack's character has, like, a pretend ring of undercover police? Like, it's never, like, you know, it appears to, like, he's when I was 90s, he will help out, but he's saying the police won't do anything. I couldn't quite get a handle on, like, what his character's deal was. Also, was he meant to be the fat kid at the flashback at the beginning? Like, because there was, so the implication was that he knew them. And I was thinking then why it would sort of make sense, but then there was never any sort of reference to it. Like,
that would have been good.
Yeah, but this movie has no interest in, like, linking anything from the past to the present, other than to, like, sort of establish, like, I guess the whole theme of the movie is, like, you look after your brother, or, like, you want that brotherly love, and that's what sort of makes Cage a little bit crazy, right? Because his brother doesn't love him the way that Vinny Chase loves his brother. Like, that's sort of, like, I guess, not the theme of the movie, but, like, the internal conflict. But aside from that, like, the intro to the movie is only there so we can see, like, the results of a suicide. Like the whole intro, it's just, it's strange. Mm-hmm. It just sets things up and gets a little bit of Cage early on, but...
So the older brother character who, he's seen that dude from Entourage's uncle has shot himself, and he wants to protect his little brother, so he gives him money to go to the arcade. He goes to the arcade to find some, like, is he going there to find Nicolas Cage? Because he finds Nicolas Cage in his weird, like, Dexter-style room covered in plastic where he's doing his torturing. He sees the torturing, and is that how he gets involved? Like, it's never really clear, like, is he looking for him? And why is he doing this at the back of an arcade? Like, it's all really, like, kind of haze, like, because I watched this, like, I mean, I did admit the first time I watched this movie, I was suffering from, like, quite a high fever, so I wasn't, like, that clear on anything that was going on, but I rewatched it today, and I was like, no, this movie just doesn't make sense, like, this, like, none of it, like, yep. It just, like, a lot of stuff happens that it expects you to go along with, and if you, so, on the second time watching it, just like, well, hang on, why is this happening here, and why is the kid suddenly watching all this stuff, but, like, it didn't seem, was that clear to you guys, or was I missing something, like...
Well, it seems like to me that it's in the back of the arcade just so that kids can stumble upon it and, like, fall into the crime ring. Like, there's no other reason why that would be there, other than maybe it's just, like, a vacant room, but still, like...
Do you think they look, maybe they look for kids who are really good at the gun games at the arcade, and they, like, are like, oh, you're really good at shooting stuff? Like, I mean, that...
I wish it was set up more like a memory flashback where these are the key moments that the older brother, Mikey, I think his name, like that he remembers, you know, so like he would wake up from a dream of seeing his uncle shot. He would wake up of a dream of stumbling upon Eddie or losing his brother when they were young or something, because you're right. It does feel either like this is some sort of weird flashback that we're going to revisit at some point. Or what I was thinking was this movie is going to be about two kids. And one of them is going to go missing and have to find the other one. Because that's also what I thought. When it jumped 23 years later, I was sort of... That was very jarring to me. I did not expect that to happen so quickly. Yeah, either get rid of all that beginning stuff, because it doesn't even come back, really. Or I was thinking maybe stick with the kids even longer for a while and just see, set that up.
I suppose especially because, like, Cage in the flashback has very little differently done to his makeup. Cage 23 years later, like, well, actually, that's something I was going to ask. I mean, maybe we, I don't know if we're jumping around a bit. So, in the film, in Deadfall, Eddie,
yeah,
the character Eddie is definitely wearing a wig. We see the wig come off. That's like the big surprise shot of the movie, is that,
yes,
the wig comes off. In this movie, Nicolas Cage is definitely wearing a wig. I would argue that character Eddie isn't, because there's quite a lot of, there's certain scenes in this movie where you would expect the wig to come off. And unless Eddie has decided to use more severe wig glue since the events of Deadpool, it would appear that the hair is supposed to be real in this one, I would argue, which is interesting as a either a character or an actor decision.
I was kind of expecting the wig to come off at some point, to be honest, because I had just watched Deadfall, and it kind of adds to the theory of maybe this isn't exactly the same character, that maybe Eddie was a twin and his parents were crazy and named them both Eddie, and then there's also Buddy at some point. I don't know. I think he might mention there were more than one brother. I can't recall exactly. It is strange. It does set it apart a little more from Deadfall as well. I was a little disappointed we didn't get Bald Cage at some point, like at the end when he's being shot to death in slow motion and we have that stripper club shootout thing. Like, that would have been great if, like, he just, like, did some sort of weird jerk from getting shot and his wig goes flying off in super slow motion.
I want to know what the mindset was making this movie. Like, how committed to this being a sequel or a quote-unquote sequel or just, like, a spiritual sequel to Deadfall it was. It's moments like that that wouldn't be difficult to execute that you could just do and it'd be like, oh, this is the same thing. You know what I mean? That almost says to me, like, oh, we're just gonna, like, we're gonna remind people of a crazy Cage, and hopefully that'll make people rent this movie on demand. Because, like, if it wasn't for Cage, how would you sell this movie?
Exactly. Yeah.
There have got to be, like, some people who buy movies for the dude from Entourage, right? Like, like,
what's strange is he's the only other known actor that I'm aware of. I didn't recognize anybody aside from Cage and Vinny Chase. So it's really strange. Oh yeah. I've already forgotten him because he's like barely there, and that's, I think, a big issue. You know, what would this movie be like if, say, Cusack was the bad guy and Cage wasn't even in it, right? And then you had some other no name playing the local cop guy. I'm only watching this to see Eddie, right? Like, I'm only watching this for that performance. If he wasn't in this movie, I probably wouldn't even, this wouldn't be on my radar whatsoever.
I understand that most people who see this movie, and I'm sure that not many people are going to see this movie, and I think across the board, we can pretty much say, don't see this movie. I know that, Mike, you like it more than I do, and maybe it's worth saying, hey, check out a couple of these different scenes that Cage is in, like, if they hit YouTube or whatever. But I think across the board, it's pretty much like, don't watch this. I don't know how many people who do actually wind up watching this movie are going to know about the history between Cusack and Cage. But when we watch The Frozen Ground, with that movie that we didn't really like, at least at the very end, we get Cusack losing his mind in that one cop room, like that one interrogation room at the end, right? Like, there's a confrontation there. Here, I mean, A, I don't think that this Cusack or this character would be able to reach that level, because he seems like he's kind of, like, coming off some kind of, like, it seems like he's in rehab, basically. Like, he's sort of, like, detoxing, because he's all bundled up throughout this movie for no reason. Like, nothing about him makes any sense.
Do you think the character's, like, he was in rehab with an ex-cop and, like, learned a lot about being a cop, and now he's decided to pretend that he's an undercover cop because he's bored? Like, that would make more as much sense as anything else in this.
I think the important thing to point out is that whatever reading you put on this film, you're spending more thought than the actual filmmakers.
Yeah.
Like, you just came up with two plausible options that make more sense than the no explanation for who this guy is that they give you in this movie.
Oh, God, no, this is the thing I picked up on. I just look at my notes. The thing I picked up, I missed the first time around. So there's this whole weird plotline with the bloody stun grenade that keeps appearing and then finally makes its big grand appearance at the end of the movie. But in the middle of the movie, it's revealed that, like, so the we first see the stun grenade when the older brother character is desperate for money and he goes to the local gun shop and tries to sell a stun grenade, and the dude's like, no one comes in here buying a stun grenade, why am I going to buy this? And then it turns out John Cusack, who we're led to believe is a policeman, gave him a stun grenade? Like, what? Like
to hawk, to sell, because he's down on his luck. He's like, here, take this.
That just reminded me, so this movie, originally, was first announced, I think, like, probably 8 months ago. Like, this movie has not been on the table for very long. It's had two name changes. Originally called Philly Fury, then it was called Southern Fury, and now it's called Arsenal.
Okay,
I don't know
okay.
that any of them
that
make
tells
any
a story.
Sense. Philly Fury makes no sense at all.
Well, the story sounds like originally this was going to take place in Philly.
Probably.
Then the backing fell out, so they had to go down south where there's more tax breaks for filming, so it turned into Southern. And then they just like, well, it's not much of a Southern anything, like, let's just change
it. And there's not much
again.
Fury here either.
Really,
but
yeah.
But there's also not really much of an arsenal.
Yeah, like, there's just that one stun grenade. But it's also like this. They basically, there's no way in hell they could, like, I don't know if this is going to have any kind of much of a release in the UK at all, but you couldn't release, certainly couldn't do a wide release of a film called Arsenal in the UK, because everyone would assume it's about an extremely popular football club.
Right.
So, like, everyone would be extremely confused when it's got a baseball game and no football whatsoever.
What I do think is pretty funny, and I don't know why I thought of it, but maybe just, you know, a little bit of a crossover to our other podcast, Keanu Club. But imagine if in that one scene in The Matrix where Keanu says guns, lots of guns, and then all of those rails, like all the like the shelves come down, and the only thing on there is one stun grenade. Like, that's like the arsenal. Like, that is like, there's not even guns in this movie. Like, there's baseball bats, there's pipes, there's baseball bats.
There's definitely fists. Needed to be called like Brothers Ransom, right?
That's a terrible name, though. Like,
I know, but
like
it's a terrible movie, right?
Well, yeah.
It fits better, or brother something, or even, you know, brotherly this or that, because it's more about that. I mean,
what's interesting, relatively speaking, is that later this year, another movie that Cage has coming out, the other movie that Ed signed up for, is Mom and Dad. So I'm assuming that's going to be about familial relationships, too. So there's a whole year of Cage familial drama and tension, I guess. So we could have had brothers, and then we could have had Mom and Dad. Like, it would have been a great year.
Mom and Dad's like a weird premise where, like, he's the dad and the mom and the dad get a virus and start trying to kill their kids or something, isn't it? Like, it's a weird, like...
Oh, I don't know. I take these movies
one
at a time.
It's going to be like a horror thriller.
Although it's possibly by the time it'll be released, it'll be a completely different film based on, like, if this was originally set in Philadelphia. And
right. It'll be about a guy finding a big stash of guns somewhere that he needs to use to be part of his arsenal. That movie.
Maybe the stun grenade will come back on that. Maybe that's going to be his regular.
Well, that's something we can start tracking with, like, the Cage Nexons and see if that ever comes around again. I don't... That is so unusual. But of all the things to be set up at the start of a movie, like a stun grenade. I just had to laugh. I mean, how I knew as soon as he put that box down at the strip club at the end, it's gonna be there. So
no, I know, I was kind of genuinely excited. I was like, oh my god, the stun grenade came back! Like, at that point, I was just waiting for anything to happen, and like, well, it sort of did. Like, and then loads of people got shot in the dick. Like, yeah. Why was this director so obsessed with everyone getting shot in the dick? Like, in that play scene?
The bullet time shotgun pellets into the dick at the end?
And it was such, like, one... It wasn't even, like, bullet time. It was just from one angle. So I think it was, like, one of those phantom cameras that can shoot, like, super mega slow, and they just slowed it all the way down to a still frame, basically, and then the CGI bullets just completely ruined it.
There is a key connection here that I didn't even think about while watching because I was so bored by this movie. I guess this is in New Orleans, so that's another popular hangout.
Oh, I thought so. I think it's in Mississippi, actually. Well, I think it's okay. Biloxi, right? But they mentioned New Orleans.
Well, because there's one line where Vinny Chase says something along the lines of, like, Katrina didn't chase us out, so this isn't going to either. And I'm like, he just compared Nicolas Cage to Katrina. Like, I don't know if that's, like, a compliment to Cage or just, like, a terrible metaphor to drop in your movie not that long after Katrina, but, like, either way, that's a crazy thing for anyone to say.
Yeah, it did sort of just seem like the thing of we need to orient the audience into where in America this is taking place. So it doesn't necessarily matter which southern state, as long as you know that they've been ravaged and they're desperate now, and so, like, yeah, money's tight and the mob has come in and taken over.
Yeah, there's a bit in the scene with Cage's brother as well, isn't, or maybe it's the scene where he tells the other older brother, who's Mikey, he tells Mikey about his, how he has just killed his brother. Because he goes into their weird backstory about, like, does he say he took the money to New Orleans and that's why you have to follow him? Or
the letter to my dead brother scene. That's my favorite part. Yeah, and he's, like, screaming how when he was in prison, he took all of his money and set up an operation without him, and it really hurt him.
Hey, buddy. Sorry about today. But you know you always were the great Jim from War of the Gargantuas when it came to me! But you remember when we were partners? Had a little carjacking operation when we were teens. Cops were on us one day. We ran. You got away, but I got caught. I was 17! They offered me community service. All I had to do was give up my accomplice, you, my brother. But no, I took the years. I got out in 3. You know, I promised my share would be waiting. The day I got out, there was nobody there to pick me up. I took a goddamn bus for the prison. You had taken my share, gone to Florida. They set up the business in New Orleans with my money, you fucker! And I never got those 3 years back. I'm Eddie. What do you think, any good?
I wanted to love it so bad, because that's the closest thing to get to a Cage freakout, and, like, I don't know if it's just poorly directed or poorly written or just mumbled, but, like, I couldn't get behind that, and I really, really wanted to.
I mean, I kind of want to see the prequel to this movie just on the basis of how... for me, the standout scene in this movie is the scene with Cage acting against his brother, because,
yeah.
Oh my god, is Christopher Plummer not really an actor? Like, it is... it's... Nope. Like... And Cage, weirdly, with, like, nothing to go against, decides to go as hard as possible, and it is one of the most confusing things to watch. Like, and his brother has, like, in a scene which has Cage in sort of full prosthetic nose and bizarre wig, like, his brother, like, I think that might be his brother's own bizarre dyed facial hair as well. I feel like I've seen photos of or interviews with Chris Copeland. That's just what he kind of looks like. And it's this bizarre, like, I guess it must be just as, like, a wink to, like, Deadpool, but it seems like such a weird, like, you think you'd go, okay, that look, we filmed that, let's do that with someone else now, and we'll just keep him a little cameo somewhere else. Like, it's like so unbelievably poor, like, that you just can't, it doesn't, like, you think in a film where everything was like that, like Deadfall, you'd think, okay, cool, like, this, the whole film is balls out like this. But when it seems to be kind of trying to be like a kind of subtler film than that in a lot of the scene, a lot of it, it just seems so like weird to suddenly have that shit.
Good to see you. Came for a little chit chat. A little surprised to see you outside the Big Easy. I'm not feeling too peachy keen being in Biloxi, Mississippi. Well, did you lose your phone? It's been a while since you made the trek.
Get in the car.
What is this, a brother bonding moment? It's a little late for that, don't you think?
Get in the car. We'll talk while we're driving.
Yeah, it goes too far for this movie, like, to introduce Buddy. Like, I love the idea that there's Eddie and Buddy, and maybe there's a Teddy out there or something, and I love the idea of Cage, like, not only is he upstaging him and embarrassing him as an actor, but he's gonna murder his own brother on screen.
Oh, no, you know what they should have done? And this would have worked as a Deadpool reference. Cage should have played both brothers. Like, I mean, he's done it before.
That would have,
like,
been great. Two Cages again, that would have been great. We haven't had that since adaptation. I would have loved that. But, yeah, I love the scene, but it totally doesn't belong in this movie whatsoever. It's just like, Eddie's working, so we need more for Eddie to do. It's even strange that they're going to introduce Buddy and then just kill him off right away. You almost think, like, Cage would murder someone else at that moment.
It's not, and I can't, one can't imagine that Chris Coppola is like hugely busy, but I mean, maybe there were more scenes in the script, and they did that one, and they were like, okay, no, we don't actually need you back, Chris. That's
well, I wonder, because like he does not get a writing credit on this movie, like, not based on characters by or anything like that, which I feel like maybe says it's not a sequel to Deadfall, but like, if you want to throw him a bone, you could give him a writing credit. You know what I mean? Like, so sort of say, based on a story by or based on characters by, you don't need to necessarily put him in the movie, because, like, you're right, he's not the best.
I feel like this isn't a film that starts as a sequel to Deadfall. I think it's a script, a completely separate script, and then they cast Cage, and then it's in some kind of discussion, like, comes up that,
yep,
like, he goes, I kind of want to play it like this, and then it gets far enough along the line, they're like, oh no, that's as a sort of gag wink to that, that's, we'll make you up as that character. Like, I don't think it's meant to be, like, I don't think it's meant to be a sequel in, like, a spiritual sense or a literal sense. I think it's just, like, he wanted to play the character the same way, so they thought, okay, let's go for it. It'll be a nice thing for the seven people who've ever bothered to watch Deadfall. Like,
it would have been great, I feel, to get a proper Deadfall sequel, like bringing back Michael Biehn and everybody else that was involved. No one else was really involved. But, I mean, to bring back Michael Biehn, that would have been something to see them after all these years facing off. Or, I don't know. I mean, there were ways to connect this more concrete, more, like, harder. To leave it just mysterious like this is kind of, like, unsatisfying in a lot of ways, but I'll take what I can get.
I guess. You like this movie so much more than I do. I was saying that, like, this movie could very really end up very near, like, in the bottom 10 of the worst movies that I see this year, just because outside of Cage, there's just nothing here. Like, I don't like... I like 0% of this movie that has nothing to do with Cage. Is there anything that either of you like aside from him?
The one thing I liked... It was just, like, really dumb. Like, so there's the moment when Mikey is finally, I can't remember if it was ever explained, but he hasn't managed to sell his stun grenade. He's managed to sell something. And he's finally bought his drugs to sell. But these dudes come around and break into his house, and they're beating him up, going, like, where's the coke? Where's the coke? There's, like, this really dumb, weird joke where he's like, the coke's in the fridge, and they're like, shut up, you idiot, like, and start beating him up, going, like, stop telling us the coke's in the fridge, thinking he's, like, taking the piss and he's got some coke in the fridge. And then he's like, no, I actually literally have kept the coke in the fridge. Like, for some reason that really tickled me. It was just, like, such a weird, like, go nowhere like little, like, script gag. Like, there's just, like, oh, I don't know, we need to make this scene a minute longer. So, like, I don't know, there's some of this sort of aimlessness of it really tickled me. Like it didn't add anything at all to the movie. It didn't say anything at all about it. But I don't know, there's something weird. That's, like, the only moment I've got written down, like, and... I mean, I did enjoy everyone getting shot in the dick.
Yeah, I didn't have any, like, particular moments aside from Cage that really stood out. I what was this, the white guy with the cornrows? What are you thinking? Like, you just don't, I just hated those for some reason. That just really bothered me. But yeah. I did like the camera work, to be honest. Like, I thought it looked really good, this movie. Like, I was kind of surprised by that and thought the, you know, cinematography, what have you. Like, I thought it looked really nice, and that's why I was like, it deserves, like, a better story, better actors, better everything else. Like, I feel like there's competence behind the camera here. It's just, it didn't let this idea really gestate long enough, or, like, we've been sort of theorizing, like, it just shifted and changed from the original intention into this quasi-Deadfall homage of some type that just, yeah, they haven't, it just feels like they don't even know precisely what they're trying to do here by the end of it either, so.
Yeah, because there's this whole thing as well where, like, the it's set up that, because when Entourage Guy is first told that, he first finds out that Mikey's been kidnapped, both, it's played as like both him and we are supposed to half suspect that the brother's in on it, and then it's revealed in flashback that he isn't. But it is, especially when I was rewatching it, I was like, that really doesn't go any, like, it, I guess it creates like a tiny amount of tension for a bit, but it doesn't really result, like, it's, there's no resolution for, in terms of, like, the characters. It's just we're then shown the flashback, and then it's like, oh no, it's, he's not, he's definitely been kidnapped. It's nice that the brother, like, the Entourage dude never suspects that his older brother's in, like, he's just like 100% trusting down the line. But, like, it's a moment that doesn't, it really, I couldn't really get my head around, like, what they were kind of doing with it. It didn't seem to, like, because it never pays off, like, it never, it's kind of like, it's set up as though, like, there's going to be this amazing twist, and the twist is, no, he just isn't.
Well, yeah, I think that just, like, that contributes to the overall lack of detail paid to the script and the whole thing. Like, there's just no care about setting anything up or paying anything off. Another thing that I wrote down was that they keep referring to their junkie niece. But the junkie niece is, like, this blonde girl who, like, looks like she's never done drugs before in her life. Like, I don't... And there's things like that. Like, there's also the fact that, like, Cage asks for $350,000, and then Vinny Chase sits down across from him and he's just like, I'm not gonna do that. He's like, all right, fine, $200,000. Like, just no... There's, like, a terrible negotiator. Like, there just seems like to be no consistency, no thought paid to anything. Like, it seems like somebody wrote the script and just like, all right, like, you guys just go make it. I'm not going to check back in with it. And nothing seems to really relate to anything else. It's kind of a shame.
Yeah, did I miss something with that figure as well? Because I feel like either I missed it or it just wasn't there. Like, it was so specific that it felt like there should have been, like, there was, like, a there was supposed to be a scene where, like, for some reason his money situation has come up with Mikey, or Mikey overhears him talking to his wife about, like, his insurance, like, and he's like, oh, my net worth is now this amount, like, because it's such a really specific number that, like,
yeah,
I don't think there was a scene like that, but, like, they even comment on it, don't they say, like, that's a really odd number?
Yeah, there's nothing to disclose how much Vinny Chase is worth at all. Like, Cage is just like, your brother's doing well, he's got that business, he must be worth $350,000. And what's even weirder is, like, when he goes to collect his money, like, his business partner's been screwing him over on the side, so he doesn't even have all the money.
Yeah, like, and that doesn't go anywhere. Like, that's not...
What was that?
The tension, but then, like, 5 minutes later, the dude comes back with a neck brace, and then he's like, I fixed it. Okay.
It's like the kidnapping. It's like these weird red herrings that don't create any kind of drama or tension, and there's no release when you find out the truth because it's just so obvious. It's like, duh.
Well, so the sort of late into the movie, that the second bit of peril is that, as well as Mikey, they've got his blonde daughter. Do we actually even see her kidnapped and tied up? Like, maybe we do, and I'd be sort of glazing over by this point, but we definitely, like, they go in for the big gun battle, but they don't really know where she is at that point, do they? Like, they kind of kill them all, but then for all they know,
right,
she could be somewhere where they have not, like, they have no idea where she is. Like, presumably she turns out to be at the back of that bar or something, but, like, and then, I misunderstood this, but I felt like John Cusack was like, the police aren't going to support you, and I feel like he explicitly lays out, if you go out and shoot this dude, it's still murder, like, and you'll go to jail. And then at the end of the film, there's this massive shootout, like, kill loads of people, and then we just see them playing baseball, like,
yep.
Is that, like, is yep. there, a, like, an end credit scene where the police roll up and be like, oh, sorry, guys, you, like, killed five dudes, like, that's not okay, like...
Nope, no extra Marvel-esque tag scene after the credits or anything like that, but, I mean, further reason why Cusack needed to be in that shootout, like, as sanction, like, to sanction the shootout as part of the law or something.
I've just called the police, it's okay now.
I mean, anything, because that is, now thinking about it, is just hilarious that, you know, they had this massive shootout and murdered all these dudes, and now they're all getting along, like, as a family, better than ever, and having this barbecue thing, and he's, like, the alpha male, like, Vinny Chase is now, like, running the family and everything, like, it's kind of hilarious.
It's just like a happy ending. Like, they have that barbecue, and there's, like, really funny jokes about making fun of vegetarians, and then just he and his brother go play baseball on what appears to be, like, a Little League field, because he drills that ball. Like, it's you know, I don't think Vinny Chase can hit a home run on a real field, but he, like, crushed. Like, it's just weird.
Yeah, look, it's just like the end. It reminded me of the end of, like, a Fast and Furious movie where they're all, like, having a Corona, like, and then it's all, like, it's kind of like, well, they need The Rock to turn up and be like, oh, no, it's okay, guys. I've sorted this all out with a judge.
With those movies, I mean, that's my favorite film franchise. I will defend that forever.
Oh, no, absolutely.
But at least
yeah,
with those
I'm 100%
movies.
With you.
They establish a sense of family. Here, nobody likes each other, and then all of a sudden at the end, they're all, like, best friends.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, let's wrap it up and for convenience here, you know? Like, it needs to be a happy ending, so, like, let's force this happy ending, even though everybody should kind of hate each other and not really want to see each other ever again after going through something like this, you know? For sure, I feel like Mikey's wife would move with the daughter somewhere out of state very quickly, and there'd be restraining orders flying around, and Vinny Chase would be in jail. Like, this is not the proper ending that, you know, reality would dictate.
I don't feel like Mikey is sticking on the straight and narrow very long. Like, I feel like he's back to trying to... He's like, oh, I found another stun grenade. Like, I'm trying to sell that. Like, he's
the new Eddie. Now that Eddie's out, someone's got to step in those
shoes. That should be the last scene, is that, like, Mikey, like, walking through and he finds, like, the hair. And he put the hair in the starch and somehow survived the gun battle.
If only. I don't think I have any other notes about this movie. Mike, do you have anything else that you wanted to mention?
No, you know, not really. I just reiterate, like, I don't think this is a good movie, okay? I'll give you that. I don't think it's good, but I've been known to like bad movies for reasons I can't explain, but at least in this one I can explain it's Cage, and, like, I feel like, you know, we've suffered through more for less. I was glad that he at least showed back up a half hour in and stuck around for the next 30 minutes. You know, we get more of him in this than Deadfall. I would say see it for the Cage stuff, but if you really, I would really recommend going back and giving Deadfall a shot and try and think of it as sort of like this good bad movie. Like, it's one of the best of the worst type films. Like, I feel like now it plays much better as camp or something sillier, something that just goes down a lot easier than getting blindsided the first time you watch it going, what the fuck is this shit kind of thing. Like, now it plays a little easier for me, so I would say, you know, go check out Deadfall.
I want to make it clear, I have no problems with Deadfall. Like, I'm looking forward to rewatching Deadfall. This movie I'd never want to see again, but Deadfall, yes, go see Deadfall. I echo that. Ed, anything else in your notes?
Yeah, I mean, I was
going to
say, like, the thing, like, this is definitely, like, not a movie I'd rate as particularly good, but I think, like, and I basically agree with your assessment, like, it is the Cage makes it, but I think, like, the thing that sort of, the other thing other than just, like, the Cage scenes and the selfie enjoyable that sets it apart from, like, a really bad film in the Cage canon would be, I think, like, 10 to 15 years ago, there's a chance in this movie that Cage would have played the Entourage dude part, because he's kind of has been in those movies. And
sure.
My God, with that version of this film would have been insufferably boring. Like, he's done a lot of those. Like, oh, what's the one where he's a
Stolen?
Teacher and... Stolen, the one where January... Is it the one?
January Jones is the one... That's Seeking Justice.
But it's always... He just plays these sort of very kind of stern, boring guys, like, who suddenly have to save their, like, inexplicably beautiful wives from whoever. And you just think, like, him in the main role in this would have just been so boring. And, like, I think that's the thing that, like, to be fair to Entourage Dude, I think I would rather watch him doing that than, like, Cage, like, because I think, like, just this is not, like, Cage in Lights Rogers is like, it's just asleep, like, it's just, like, it shows no interest in the movie he's making at that point, and you just think, like, why, like, I guess for the money is the reason, but, like, you just think, really, could you not have brought something to this, like, but, no, I like, the, so, like, in that, like, I think it would definitely, like, not, for that reason, it wouldn't, like, rank right at the bottom of the sort of list of Cage movies, because, like, at least he's in it doing something interesting. It's a tough film to really like, you can't, there is that thing where, like, every film inexplicably has some crazed fan who'll go on Amazon and give it 5 stars, but it's sort of, like, tough to, presumably there's someone who's obsessed with the Entourage Dude who's, like, watches everything that he's in, who'll go, like, oh, I'm so moved by him fighting for his brother's life.
So, Ed, where can people find you online? Where can they find your writing about Cage? Or what do you want to share with our growing audience?
So, you can find probably, like, Twitter. It's probably best place to find me at EdJeff, E-D-J-E-F-F. Or you can find all my Cage stuff on Medium at medium.com/@EdJeff, which goes up to... the trust, and I'll be doing, so at some point this year I'll be doing, like, an update run of the 5 or 6 movies that have come out since then, including this.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for joining us, and you will be back, I'm assuming, later this year, unless it gets delayed from Mom and Dad. But this was fun. You are our first, I think you're officially our, no, Lindsay Gibb, you're our first non-North American guest. I was going to say first international guest, but you're our first non-North American guest. So you hold an honor and a title and a privilege. So thank you very much for joining us.
No problem.
So for all things Cage Club, including our podcast and reviews of Deadfall, you can go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub. See all the movies that we've done. Check out other shows on the network. Lots of things for you to listen to with those two places. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Ed Jefferson. And we'll see you next time on Cage Club.